The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. For the next couple of shows, the Bible study will be on the attitude that it takes to build God's family. Also, just a couple of people writing in about the different look, the new studio that we're in. One says, new studio, hope you're doing okay as you were sitting today. Keep the message of God coming. I need it every day. Well, it's our Edmond studio, our headquarters studio. And yeah, for some reason, I sit on this side of the pond, and in the Edstone studio, I stand up. So we have some variety, but we're very privileged and blessed to have the facilities that we do that make it so easy for us to broadcast wherever we happen to be. Just one more email, since we're on that. It says, that was a much-needed Bible study that you gave today. It is hard to watch what's happening at times. The destruction of our country and the world, along with all of the insanity. It's difficult not to get depressed over what is coming. But the future is our hope, and that's what I'm trying to focus on. However, that doesn't always work. So we certainly do need some good prods and admonitions and to be reminded, as I said at the end of yesterday's show, that all of these prophecies, these dire prophecies, so many of them, they do culminate in the greatest event in the history of the universe, the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Well, yesterday, President Trump abruptly ended his press briefing. He's being hounded by all of these little children, basically, throwing tantrums. And one journalist in particular, she was asking him about all of the testing and why. Why he says over and again that, you know, we've had more tests for COVID-19 than any nation in the world, by far. And she basically was saying, well, what is this? Why do you brag about the testing? And is this some kind of a global contest? And the president responded to that by saying, well, why don't you ask China? And as it happens, this reporter was Asian American. So the news media, they were quick to jump right on this. The woman, the reporter herself did. Why are you asking me that or telling me that to go ask China? They detected some kind of a racial slur in this response coming from the president before he then walked away. He just walked out of the briefing. Here's how Brian Stelter reported on this incident yesterday at CNN, clip one.
And I think what we saw in that exchange with Weijia Zhang is something that has racial overtones. It is racist to look at an Asian American White House correspondent and say, ask China. This isn't happening in a vacuum. This is part of a pattern of behavior from the president that goes back many years. So he doesn't have the benefit of the doubt that someone might have if, for the first time ever in their life, they made a comment like that to a reporter.
This is the same reporter, by the way, and you would know this if you listened to yesterday's show, but this is the same reporter who said that I can't believe that the right-wing media would take the time to cover Russiagate, the conspiracy, the hoax, the Michael Flynn case. There's not enough time for those stories because we're living in a pandemic. 9/11's happening every day. Just the day before this clip you just heard, the day before, here's Brian Stelter on CNN, clip two.
It's so disappointing to look at what we're seeing from right-wing media these days, where there's such an obsession with the deep state and these revelations about the Russia probe and the decision about Michael Flynn. They're treating the Michael Flynn story like it's a bigger deal than the deaths of 2,000 Americans a day.
Questions about the Russian probe. There's no time for that in the 24-hour news cycle, says CNN. They were offended by the coverage over the weekend on Fox News and some other conservative sites, I guess, because they weren't covering the same subjects that CNN covers. And as I said yesterday, these comments by Mr. Stelter, they're quite revealing, aren't they? Because it shows how important it is for them not just to cover the news as they see it, but what gets covered as well and what shouldn't be covered, what should just be ignored. Now, in the case of this comment that President Trump made as he was leaving the podium, that demands coverage. He does not get a pass because, you see, he's had a history of all of these racial slurs or saying things that have these racial overtones. Now, that needs to be covered. The Russia probe, that does not need to be covered. You give the Obama administration and all of his deep state operatives, you give them a complete and total and free pass. Even if the facts now turn up, proving it was a hoax from the very beginning, who can forget? And this wasn't just stated one time. President Obama and his officials were stating this over and again, and the media just took it and ran with it. Back in 2017, as his administration or as his presidency was coming to an end, and he was out there together with all of his sycophants saying that this was an administration that was scandal-free, no scandals whatsoever during the Obama years. Here's what he said less than a week before leaving office, clip three.
I mean, look, I'm proud of the fact that with 2 weeks to go, we're probably the first administration in modern history that hasn't had a major scandal in the White House.
The first administration in modern history with no scandal in the White House. He said this, even as he was directing James Comey, Sally Yates, and others to spy on the Trump campaign, to withhold information about the Russia investigation from the Trump administration, even not just the campaign. Even when President Trump became President Trump after the inauguration, if there's things that you need to keep from him in the interest of making sure that this investigation goes forward, well, then so be it. By the way, yesterday, you know, we played that clip from President Obama over the weekend where he talked about to drop this case against General Flynn. It's unprecedented to let someone off for perjury. And of course, the charge wasn't even perjury. But leave that aside. He's there saying this is unprecedented. Sam gave me this headline today. This is from January 17th, 2017. This is three days before Obama leaves office. And the headline, it's from the New York Times. The headline says, Obama pardons James Cartwright, general who lied to FBI in leak case. He lied to the FBI, this general, General Cartwright, and Obama pardoned him. Obama let him off. So much for unprecedented. I don't know much about the Cartwright case, but what we do know about General Flynn is that he was set up so that they could nab him on a process crime. That's what it amounts to. The New York Times in 2017 said President Obama on Tuesday pardoned James Cartwright, a retired Marine Corps general and former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his discussions with reporters about Iran's nuclear program, saving him from a possible prison sentence. So Obama was right there to make sure that he spared Mr. Cartwright from a prison sentence. But over the weekend, he's very troubled and disturbed by the fact that the DOJ would drop its case against this 33-year veteran, Lieutenant General Mike Flynn. Obama was talking about the rule of law. He's concerned now about the rule of law. And when these officials This, you could call this an Antiochus rule. When they start talking about the rule of law, then you know there's some serious lawlessness going on. You know it. This January 5th meeting, remember all the main players were there. And then following the meeting, the one back in 2017, President Obama at that time, he met with Sally Yates, James Comey, and he said, according to what Susan Rice later wrote to herself, she sent this email to herself, remember, on January 20th, the day of the inauguration, saying that President Obama is doing everything by the book. I think she said that twice. So here again, they say they're doing it by the book, which means exactly the opposite. They certainly didn't go by the book with General Flynn. They set him up. They leaked to the Washington Post to say that he hadn't done anything wrong. Then these two FBI agents show up and say, hey, we'd just like to have a chat with you. You don't need a lawyer. You don't need anything like that. It's just a friendly chat. And then they took one of his statements and made it out to be a lie, even though they didn't even believe it was a lie, going away from the meeting. And of course, we know now about the messages back and forth between these agents. Well, are we trying to get him fired? Is that the objective here? All of the Obama people, for 2 years, inside and outside of government, there were some holdovers, like I was saying yesterday. Sally Yates for just a short time, Jim Comey for like 5 months. But the deep state, it's deep. And what President Trump or candidate Trump was saying in 2016, it's been proven true. The swamp, he talked about draining the swamp. There were a lot of people. They talk about Attorney General Barr doing the president's bidding. There's people doing Obama's bidding to this day. To this day, as I said yesterday, even Republicans, they would not stand up against this lawlessness that was going on. They don't want, the media doesn't want to have anything to do with the Russian probe now. They could care less because it's being exposed as a hoax. But who can forget them for 2 years plus? The media, the Democrats, all of them, the Obama officials, going on and on and on about how that this current presidency, it was compromised. President Trump is a Russian asset. Listen to this montage from the last few years on the Trump-Russia collusion that was never there, of course. Clip 4.
Gives me a lot of heartburn that a candidate that is this close, at least ideologically, to Putin, that has several senior advisors very close to the Kremlin in different ways, that we would share any information about Russia.
We now need Donald Trump to explain to us the extent to which the hand of the Kremlin is at the core of his own campaign. There are real questions being raised about whether Donald Trump himself is just a puppet for the Kremlin.
Mr. Trump is, for whatever reason, either intimidated by Mr. Putin, afraid of what he could do or what might come out as a result of these investigations.
What a great case officer Vladimir Putin is. He knows how to handle an asset, and that's what he's doing with the president.
And Donald Trump is going to do what he can to protect Mr. Putin.
How Mr. Putin now is the master puppeteer of Donald Trump.
Americans have never seen a president of the United States support an adversary the way President Trump has supported President Putin. A single ominous question now hangs over the White House. What could possibly cause President Trump to put the interests of Russia over those of the United States?
He's taken a series of steps that had Vladimir Putin dictated them, he couldn't have mirrored more effectively.
He's basically following a script that could have been written for him by the Kremlin.
Right. Stunning breaking news. The New York Times reporting that after President Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, law enforcement officials were so concerned about the behavior of the President of the United States that they began investigating whether he was secretly working on behalf of Russia.
Well, I think, Don, it's obviously explosive just to read it in print. But it's not surprising. I think, in fact, I would go so far as to say I think the FBI would have been derelict not to have at least considered the possibility, given the behavior of both candidate Trump and President Trump.
And I just feel as though Mr. Trump is has fallen prey to what Mr. Putin is trying to do.
Do you still believe the president could be a Russian asset?
I think it's possible.
Do you think the Russians have leverage over President Trump?
I don't know the answer to that.
You think it's possible?
Yes.
President Putin's got a very high return on his investment.
That all roads lead to Russia.
All roads lead to Russia. I think that last statement there from Ms. Pelosi, that's pretty recent. And what did we learn last Thursday with the release of all these documents, all these transcripts? Some of these same people saying what you just heard in front of the camera. And then when they're brought in to a closed door hearing, and then when they're put under oath, what did they say? They said something entirely different. James Clapper, to just take one of them, I read this yesterday, he said in his testimony, "I never saw any direct empirical evidence that the Trump campaign or someone in it was plotting, conspiring with the Russians to meddle with the election." Now that's from the Director of National Intelligence under Barack Obama. He never saw any direct empirical evidence. They had nothing. They had nothing from day one. And they lied about it for 3 years. They had no evidence and they lied about it for 3 years. And they couldn't have even gotten away with it then were it not for the complicit media. The media were part of the hoax. Lee Smith at the New York Post. It says, after Mueller filed his report last spring, CNN's Jake Tapper said that, "I don't know anybody who got anything wrong." That was Tapper's take after the Mueller report came out. Oh, well, we got it entirely right, I guess. These people, they see themselves as infallible. This reporter badgering the president yesterday, and then she's offended. Does that have a racial overtone to it? This is the way they operate. Little children, Isaiah 3. It's right out of Isaiah 3. It says, "Don't expect anyone in the mainstream media to admit gross journalistic malpractice this time either. The tragic fact is that once prestigious press organizations, including CNN, as well as MSNBC, the New York Times, and the Washington Post, they weren't fooled by the collusion hoax. They were an essential part of it." This is the same point that Molly Hemingway made in her piece from last week. They couldn't have pulled this off without the media. The media's role was crucial. It was indispensable in this. They needed the leaks. They were leaking incessantly. This was all part of the attempted coup. In the New York Post, just today, it's editorial. It says, "It's now clear that the Obama-Comey FBI and Justice Department never had anything more substantial than the laughable fiction of the Steele dossier to justify all these investigations." It's all they had. The dirty dossier. It's all that they had as evidence. And even that wouldn't fly until Clapper worked in collusion with CNN. Following the meeting that James Comey had with then incoming President Donald Trump, January 6th, 2017. And then finally the media had the hook. And so they started reporting the contents of the Steele dossier. President Trump tweeted out yesterday, "Obamagate makes Watergate look small time." Look at what they did to the Trump administration. As I covered yesterday, there were a lot of top-notch individuals that bowed out of their opportunity to work for the Trump administration because so many people thought, well, this is a Russian asset. You just heard the montage. Why would I want to work for a Russian asset? And then just the level of distractions. It's a wonder he was able to accomplish anything in those first 3 years. Because as soon as the Mueller report was a big flop, then they moved right into Ukraine. Then they went right into impeachment. And now they're milking this pandemic for everything that they can, like you heard from yesterday. Because they don't want the focus to be on this. Their mistakes. Their treason, really. Their treason. These are treasonous acts. The Post says, information released as the Justice Department dropped its charges against Mike Flynn shows that President Barack Obama, in his final days in office, played a key role in fanning the flames of phony scandal, fully briefed on the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. He knew the FBI had come up with nothing despite months of work starting in July 2016. That's when Crossfire Hurricane started. It was even before the election. This was the insurance policy, as Peter Strzok said in one of his text messages. We need this as insurance. I know he's not going to win the election, but just in case he does. And then when he did, that's when Obama unleashed all of the investigators, first to look into Russian collusion. And they hurriedly came out with their conclusions in early January 2017. And that led to all the meetings. Obama talking with Comey saying, now look, you want to make sure that you withhold information about these investigations from the Trump administration, the incoming administration, because they're being investigated. That's what was going on. And now it's being exposed. They have been exposed, which is why they don't want to talk about it, which is why they want you focusing on COVID-19 or remarks with racial overtones. Listen to what this is after the Mueller report was released. So we're going back to just the spring of last year. Ben Rhodes, perhaps the top advisor to Barack Obama, the architect of the Iran nuclear deal, the one that took the narrative out there to deceive the media. Back then, they had to lie to the media, lie to the American people, lie to Congress, just to get that legislation to go through. This was his reaction last year after the Mueller report was released and we learned that there's no evidence. And then you hear Ben Rhodes in this clip talking about how that, well, you know, we didn't have anything to do with that. Clip 5.
We didn't even know that there was an FBI investigation of Trump. I didn't. President Obama didn't. Like, we actually abided by the firewalls between, if there were any investigations that took place, those decisions were made in the Justice Department, in the FBI, not in the White House. They will find nothing that suggests that there was any political White House involvement in any of that. Literally, I learned about the FBI investigation in Trump as a private citizen in the Washington Post. So you have to understand that we actually abided by the long-standing practice of the White House not getting involved in that kind of stuff.
They find out that Mueller doesn't deliver the goods. So what does Ben Rhodes immediately start saying? Well, I mean, we didn't know. We didn't even know there were investigations going on. I learned about it from the Washington Post. And whatever they turn up, Bill Barr or whoever, they're not going to find anything on us because we didn't know about it. And now what are we learning? Just a year later, Obama's the one that's informing Sally Yates about the phone call between General Flynn and Kislyak in December of 2016, January of 2017. Sally Yates, Andy McCarthy wrote about this a couple days ago. She was shocked. I couldn't believe what President Obama was telling me. She was shocked. Obama was right there. He was calling the shots. In what world would the DOJ and the FBI unleash all these investigations against a political opponent, and Barack Obama, the president at the time, had no idea? He had no idea what was going on. He's the one that unleashed the IRS against conservative groups in 2012. Look at the track record. And then he unleashes the DOJ and the FBI on his political opponent, Hillary Clinton's political opponent. And that investigation continued. Thanks to the media and all the leaks and Jim Comey and everything else, Bob Mueller. Continued for 3 years. And now the truth is finally being told. And there's crickets coming from CNN. Not enough time to cover this now. They're too busy. The New York Post says, on January 5th, 2017, Obama told top officials who'd be staying on the new administration to keep the crucial facts from Team Trump. It happened at an Oval Office meeting with Vice President Joe Biden. Joe Biden was in there. You wonder if he's going to get any questions out on the campaign trail. Whenever he comes out of the basement, are they going to ask him? Are they going to ask him about this history? It says, it happened at an Oval Office meeting with Vice President Joe Biden, Intel Chiefs John Brennan and James Clapper, National Security Advisor Susan Rice, Jim Comey, Sally Yates. And then it refers to this email. Remember, Susan Rice sends this email to herself on January the 20th. It says, she said in the email to herself, we are mindful to ascertain, this is from Obama, President Obama said he wants to be sure that as we engage with the incoming team, that would be the Trump administration, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. Be mindful that you may not be able to share information with the Trump officials. And then as part of the plot, what was Comey supposed to do as he went and briefed President-elect Trump? He assured him over and again, you're not part of the investigation. We're not investigating you. Even as Susan Rice is saying, Barack Obama told us. There may be information you have to withhold from the incoming president. Information that pertains to the Russian investigation. The New York Post says here, this even as then President Obama also directed that as many people as possible across his administration be briefed on the utterly unsubstantiated allegations against Team Trump, and as Rice and others took unprecedented steps to unmask U.S. citizens like Flynn, whose conversations had been caught on federal wiretaps of foreigners. It says, indeed, the Obama administration went on a full-scale leak offensive, handing the Washington Post, New York Times, and others a nonstop torrent of anonymous allegations of Trumpite ties to Moscow. It suggested that the investigations were finding a ton of treasonous dirt on Team Trump, when in fact the investigators had come up dry. You heard the montage. They were out there every day. Oh, we have so much evidence. You would not believe what we've seen. We've got the evidence. He's going down. And as I say, they couldn't have even pulled it off were it not for Jake Tapper and Brian Stelter and Don Lemon. And Chris Cuomo, and on it goes. The New York Times, the Washington Post, they all played such a critical role here. The New York Post says, sadly, Comey's FBI played along, sandbagging Flynn with the friendly interview, quote-unquote, that later became the pretext for the bogus charges dropped last week, as well as triggering the White House chaos that led to this, to his ouster. It says this when the FBI had already gone over the general with a fine-tooth comb and concluded that no, he'd done nothing like collude with the Russians. But they kept that case open, remember? It was case closed on January 4th, 2017, but they reopened it. Well, by they, I should say Barack Obama. He reopened it, and he told Jim Comey and Sally Yates, and what a surprise, what a shock this was for Sally Yates to hear this. Yes, this is what happened with General Flynn. He was on the phone with Kislyak and talking about the sanctions on Russia and violating the Logan Act. He's committed perjury. He's lying. It says, meanwhile, Comey himself gave Trump an intentionally misleading briefing on the Steele dossier. That was followed by leaks that suggested the dossier was the tip of the iceberg rather than a pack of innuendo that hadn't all at all checked out under FBI scrutiny. The Post concludes saying, Pulitzer Prizes were won for blaring utter fiction. The Trump administration was kneecapped out of the gate. Innocents like Flynn were bankrupted along the way. It says, say this about Obama. He knows how to play dirty. But you see, it's worse than that. It's worse than dirty politics. As President Trump says, it's far worse than Watergate. As my father has written, it's treasonous at the highest levels of government. This is unprecedented. This has never happened. When has an outgoing president ever tried to frame and set up his successor based on a dirty dossier? Based on all of this salacious innuendo and gossip? None of it true. None of it true. And yet, in looking at all of the Obama sycophants, in hearing them, in watching them for 3 years, you would have thought every single bit of the Steele dossier was the truth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll continue today's program with our Bible study. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and persons that at one time were known to us only from Scripture. The Bible is real, and you need to pay attention to it. Call now and request your free copy of The Authority of the Bible. This lesson, which comes from the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, blows the dust off your Bible. You will learn how to mine the treasures buried in the greatest book on earth. You can discover its secrets and enrich your life today. For more information, please visit thetrumpet.com. Trumpet Daily.
My father makes a comment. I think it's in one of my quotes here in just a bit, so I don't remember the booklet right offhand. But he talks in his writings about the attitude that we need to really build up the family of God. And Jesus Christ, of course, our perfect example. he perfectly displayed this attitude. You can read about it in John 8 here. Read along with me in your Bible, verse 28 of John, chapter 8. It says, then said Jesus unto them, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall you know that I am he, and that I do nothing of myself, but as my Father has taught me, I speak these things. Here is Jesus Christ, the Son of God, saying to his disciples, I do nothing of myself. Now, that's some kind of I am humility. He talks about I am in this chapter. Well, all through the Gospel of John. He represented his Father in heaven. And he said, I'm not here to do my own thing. I'm here to carry out his will. This is from John's Gospel, The Love of God. It says, what a precious scripture, referring to John 8:28. This all-powerful God said, I do nothing of myself, and whatever my Father taught me, that's what I teach you. No person on this earth has ever come close to that example of humility. No one comes close to this kind of I am humility. No one comes close to being humble like Jesus Christ. It takes a miracle, in fact, a miracle from God to overcome the pulls of the flesh, our carnal nature, that vain, prideful nature, in order to humble ourselves before God. My father says, throughout his physical life, Christ always remembered why he was there from the beginning. The master plan was that I came down to this earth not to do my own will, but my Father's will. So you see, he wasn't looking. Christ wasn't looking to be original. He just wanted to be an extension of his Father in heaven and to carry out that Father's will. Verse 29 continues, it says, and he that sent me is with me. The Father has not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him. And my father writes in the John's Gospel booklet about how that this is one of his favorite scriptures, if not the favorite. He does always those things that please the Father. He exhibits complete, total loyalty to God. That's the beautiful attitude that will build the family of God. And so there it is. It comes out of John's gospel, the love of God. This is the attitude that will build up the family of God. This is the attitude we need to be building into our lives and minds, into our marriages and families. Filling up on the love of God, the power of God, God's Spirit, that spirit of humility. That attitude, I do always those things that please him, in Thayer's, if you look at the definition for the Greek word for please, it means to accommodate oneself to the opinions, desires, and interests of others. Of course, in this case, it's referring to God the Father. Accommodating yourself to the opinions, desires, and interests of God the Father. Now, we don't see this in the world today. We certainly don't see it in the world of politics, as I covered in the first segment. What we see there are lies and deceit. There's pride. There's an inability to even admit error, to even say, I got it wrong. There's no humility. No humility whatsoever. In the family of God, it's very different. The I am humility is what builds up that family. The attitude of always striving to please our Father in heaven, that builds up the family. You think about this in the context of obedience to God's commandments. You see here that obviously God's looking for a lot more than just our obeying because we have to. Sometimes you can see this in a child, but really I shouldn't even limit it to the young people. But we've all seen examples among young people who, you know, they kind of grit their teeth and they'll go along with it and do it because they absolutely have to. But you can see that the attitude is not John 8:29. And the truth of it is we all struggle with this. Adults, young people, all of us. It's easy sometimes to conceal a bad attitude, even when you're obeying by the strictness of the letter. But God sees, he reads our hearts. He knows when the attitude is right. The thing is, if the attitude is right, if it is like this, it's like my father describes in the John's Gospel book. It's a beautiful attitude. And it builds the family of God. We are the disciples of Christ today. which means our number one objective in life is to build up the family of God, to support the Father of the family, to submit to God the Father, to even please God in everything that we do. I was telling the students last week, when you think about just pleasing the one above you, the supervisor, we have a lot of opportunities to do that, especially in the summer when you've got the summer educational program coming along and teenagers coming in from all over the world, and our college students put in positions, many of them in leadership, positions of leadership. And yet they report to, you know, the assistant or the director of the camp or the head of the activity. We're all in positions of assisting someone. And of course, ultimately, we assist and support God the Father above all. Do we strive to do always those things that please God the Father? Are we happy to do it? Do we have an attitude of gratitude? There's plenty of examples, as I say, of people that can obey the strict letter of the law, but do so grudgingly, or do so without joy and gladness. Look at the example of ancient Israel. Cursed, so many curses, because God said in Deuteronomy 28, you didn't worship me, you didn't observe my commandments with a glad heart. You didn't have the right attitude. They got out there in the wilderness and they had a bad attitude from day one. They complained. They murmured. John chapter 5, staying in the Gospel of John. Chapter 5, verse 19, it says, "Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he sees the Father do. For what things soever he does, these also doeth the Son likewise." Jesus was just a copycat, in other words. These are the instructions that Jesus gave to this disciple who was so close to him. These two had such an intimate relationship, Jesus Christ and the Apostle John, or the one who became the Apostle. And this is what Christ related to John. "Look, I do what the Father does. Whatever he does, that's what I do." Jesus Christ structured his entire life around the Father's will. Look at how he prayed the night before he was crucified. He didn't want to go through that humanly. But he prayed, "Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." It's your will that matters. It's what you want that takes precedent. Verse 30 in John 5 says, "I can of mine own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father which has sent me." I seek the Father's will. I don't seek my own will. That's why he prayed, "Thy will be done." We can be struggling through a trial, just like Jesus was about to go through with his crucifixion, and say, "Honestly, before God, I'd really rather not go through this. But if this is your will, I accept it. And I accept it with a glad heart." It's possible even to rejoice in trials. Think about how much we can learn in the midst of trials and tests. What it reveals about our character, or lack thereof. Maybe God's trying to really help us see something that's important so that we can grow. John 6 and verse 38, here again it says, "For I came down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me." I didn't come here to do my own thing, said Jesus, over and over and over again. He wasn't motivated by selfish desire. If Jesus Christ was motivated by selfishness, there would be no family of God. Did you realize this? There would be no hope for our future. There'd be no hope for us, for mankind, if he came and just served himself instead of supporting and submitting to the will of the Father. There would be no family. Now, that's a lesson we can take and apply to the physical realm as well. Families break down when they stop doing the Father's will. What you see in Isaiah 3 and other passages is upside down. Isaiah 3 and verse 12, the Father's not even mentioned. So, not carrying out the Father's will. Look at the damage and destruction that causes within the family. It's the same thing on the spiritual level. Christ didn't come to try to be original. He said in John 17 and verse 4, I have glorified you on the earth. This is his prayer to God. I have finished the work which you gave me to do. And the Father, as we know, was well pleased. Jesus just came to finish the work that God gave him to do. He came to carry out the will of the Father. What a tremendous lesson there is in this for us. This is what's absolutely needed, top to bottom, in God's family. Now, the beauty of that family relationship, as I was telling the students last week, is everybody generally has opportunity to express their views or opinions or to chime in. I think my wife would certainly say that, my children as well. But like Harry Truman said, the buck has to stop with somebody. There has to be a final decision made. Who makes it? Is it a committee within the family of God, or is there a father who reigns supreme, the head over all? He wants our input. He wants to know what we think. And yet, what if there's a time, like I was saying to the students, when maybe the supervisor just didn't have the time to consider your feedback or your input? Could you still, in those circumstances, just go forward and carry out the Father's will or the supervisor's will right to a T? Right to the tiniest detail. John 14 and verse 24, it says, He that loves me not, keeps not my sayings, and the word which you hear is not mine, but the Father's, which sent me. That's John 14 and verse 24. And then in verse 28, it says, you have heard how I said unto you, I go away and come again unto you. If you loved me, you would rejoice, because I said, I go unto the Father, for my Father's greater than I. You're seeing a pattern here in the Gospel of John. Some repetition even, over and again. Notice John 12 and verse 49, it says, for I have not spoken of myself, but the Father which sent me. He gave me a commandment, what I should say and what I should speak. Are we humble enough to just take the commandment from above and say, this is what I'm told to do? You run into problems when you aren't able to follow instructions from the supervisor above. Our objective here as the bride of Jesus Christ is to faithfully carry out the will of the superior. The will of the husband, the will of the Father. And you can understand this lesson with a lot of practical situations, examples. You know, someone that's gotten some really, as I was telling the students, you've gotten some excellent training on the piano or playing the violin or maybe with dance lessons. And then you've gone through this for 7, 8, 9, 10 years through your youth, through your teen years. You get to be 19, 20 years of age, and all of a sudden you really have quite a skill there. Well, not all of a sudden. It comes after years and years of work. But you've got a skill that you can teach to others. And so even sometimes here around campus, you'll see 20-year-olds that are teaching little 5-year-olds how to play the piano. And if they've learned from an expert above them going into that piano lesson with the 5-year-old, what's that college student going to do? Well, most likely, if he's going to be a good teacher, he's just going to try to teach that little 5-year-old what he has been taught. Imagine going in and just creating something totally different than what you were taught your whole life. It wouldn't work very well. We want to try to convey to others what we've learned. This is a basic principle you see throughout the Bible. 2 Timothy 2, Paul talked about, he told Timothy, go out and find individuals that you can teach what you've been taught. We've got to pass it along for this to work throughout the family. Everyone has to be like Jesus Christ when it comes to glorifying God, supporting God, fulfilling the will of God. A John 8:29 mentality. The John 8:29 attitude. The attitude that builds the family. John 7. Notice this, John 7 and verse 14, it says, now about the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. And the Jews marveled, saying, how knows this man letters, having never learned? How does he know so much? He didn't go to university. He wasn't taught by the experts. He knew so much because he learned it from his father. Verse 16, Jesus answered them and said, my doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. If any man will do his will, he shall know the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself. Look, I'm saying what I'm saying. I'm teaching what I'm teaching because I've received it of God. And you can know and understand the same truth, said Jesus. Verse 18, it says, he that speaks of himself seeks his own glory. This is a powerful verse here as well. This is the attitude of humility that God will give to us. Miraculously, if we humble ourselves before his mighty hand, if we cry out to God for this kind of I am humility. Verse 18, it says, he that speaks of himself seeks his own glory. But he that seeks his glory that sent him, the same is true, and no unrighteousness is in him. See, if it's about self-promotion or seeking our own glory, it's going to end in ruin. But if we're out there actively seeking God's glory, it says the same is true, and no unrighteousness is in him. Jesus Christ, our perfect example, did not seek his own glory. He was out there actively promoting and declaring the glory of God, God's glory, declaring the Father. John 1:18, that's from the Gospel of John as well. All of these wonderful verses, the I am humility. My father has an entire chapter devoted to that subject in John's gospel, the love of God. We all need more of it, more of God's love, more of this Christ-like humility, more of that attitude of gratitude, worshiping God with a glad heart, obeying God's commandments to the letter, but also by the Spirit, obeying God from the heart, obeying his commandments because we love him, because we want to please him, because we know his way works. Because we trust him. Because he's filled us with his love, his mind, his spirit, his power. This, as I say, this is the attitude that builds up the family of God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.com. Anchor.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.